number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Wound studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
On the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, it happened. Peyton Manning officially announced his retirement, and Father Time remains unbeaten once again. Oh, what a speech. What an absolute great speech. The thing about the speech, and this is the analysis that came by from so many who listened to it, was this is so Peyton Manning. It was so thorough. It was so complete. Nothing was missed. It was laid out beautifully. It was prepared well. Get it? It was executed well. It was a quintessential retirement speech. He thanked everybody. He went through it all. He didn't skip any segment of his career. He talked about the things that mattered to him. He talked about the people that mattered to him. He thanked every fan base along the way, from high school all the way through to Denver and winning the Super Bowl. He talked about what football meant to him. He talked about his parents. He talked about his brothers. He talked about his teammates. He talked about the coaches, the GMs, the equipment personnel, the people on staff, all of the people that had anything to do with anything he did well. And he was humble. It was funny. There was a moment where he talked about setting the rookie record for most interceptions, a record he still holds. He really hoped that Andrew Luck and Cam Newton and Matt Stafford and Eli Manning would break that record. And he said he still kidded Eli Manning that he would have if he had started 16 games. It was perfect Peyton Manning in announcing the retirement. Now, will we ever get to the reason why it came today and not earlier? You know, I speculated last week that maybe Manning is wanting to play and needed to kind of feel out the league. Is there any interest in anybody taking a chance on him? It didn't have to be a Super Bowl-driven team. It didn't have to be a team that was built to go to the playoffs. Maybe it was just, can I just do this one more year? Just one more? Doesn't have to be great. You know, it's kind of like when I lived in cold weather climates and we'd play golf and it'd be November and I just wanted that one more round. And the place is brown and it's muddy and there's still snow patches, but just get that one more round in. Manning, I think, wanted to get one more year in, but I just think he surveyed the landscape, took a little time to look and didn't really see anything working out for him. And instead of sort of coming out and saying, "Boy, I really like to play again. Anybody want me?" And having everybody go, "No," I think this helped make the decision easier. But what a right decision it was to go out like this. And not only to go out like this, to go out the way he did it today. Man, I was blown away by the completeness of this retirement announcement. But at the same time, I wasn't blown away because, as I said earlier, it's so Manning. You would never expect Peyton Manning in one of the biggest moments of his life, right? There is starting in the NFL, playing in the playoffs, playing in the Super Bowl, but also this moment. It's going to get carried on radio. It's going to be carried on television. It's going to be in all the papers. It's him by himself. No teammates, right? This is the only time. This is one of the only times where Manning stands alone. He doesn't have teammates bailing him out or teammates that are benefiting from his play. He stands alone at that podium and tells the world he's done. And how he tells the world he's done says a lot about his career. But you know what else it said a lot about? Football. All of the talk of there's a war on football. There's a war on football. Well, you know what? Manning wrote a love letter to football today. A love letter to the sport that gave him so much. The fame, the money, but fulfilled the thing inside of him that he wanted to do his whole life. And he got to do it in one of the most craziest storybook ways I've ever seen a career end. One of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the game leaves the game with a Super Bowl championship that he was not directly responsible for. Yet won. And how it was laid out perfectly. We've said this over and over again, but it bears repeating on this day. When you think about this season for Peyton Manning, and the arc of this season, and the storyline to this season, I kid you not, it is a Matt Christopher book, for those of you who remember the author of young sports novels. You couldn't write it better. Aging quarterback, struggles, gets booed, can't complete passes, throwing interceptions, team keeps winning, but everybody wants to know, what's going on? This is crazy. It's time to make a change. And finally, a change is made. And the young kid who takes over is the toast of the city, and he's the toast of the town, while the old man has to struggle with the bumps and bruises of recovery, while the city celebrates in the awe of a 25-year-old kid. And then that 25-year-old kid struggles a little bit, but he's still healthier than the old man. And the losses come a little bit. But he's still a better option than the old man. And then it's the end of the season. And the team needs one win to secure home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And the offense is struggling under the kid. And the old man is waiting on the sidelines. And he's got to go in. And he doesn't have very many bullets left in the gun. But he's got enough smarts to figure out how to move the offense. And he does. And it ain't pretty. And the stats aren't mind-boggling. But a victory comes nonetheless. It's not a redemptive moment. It's not a restore moment. It's not a moment that made people go, ah, oh, Peyton Manning is back, baby. He's back. But it made people go, yep, all right. He came in and he did what he was supposed to do. And the coach made a decision to go with the old man through the playoffs, even though everybody knew, hey, this could actually be a liability. Let's be honest, we barely got any good games from him this year. Maybe one, that night game against Green Bay. Other than that, he has put his team in terrible positions with his inability to complete passes and throw accurately. And yet, they beat the Steelers, and they beat the Patriots, and they go to the Super Bowl, and everyone's talking about the other young quarterback that does all the dancing, that thinks he's Superman, that's 15-1, that also has a stellar defense. And the old man knows this is it. This is probably his last chance at winning a Super Bowl. And he doesn't want to go 1-3. And they win, and the defense wins. And he plays just enough not to screw it up. And he goes out a champion. But had he not come into that game in San Diego, had the young kid, Brock Osweiler, done the thing he was supposed to do, the thing he had done so well, to have been the toast of the town, to be the toast of Denver, to have everybody sort of look at him and say, this is the savior, this is the quarterback that's going to lead us to the future once the old man leaves us alone. If he had just done those things, Peyton Manning may not have the storybook ending. It was that close. I mean, it's paper thin. It's paper thin. The San Diego Chargers were not a very good football team. Brock Osweiler and the Broncos should have beat San Diego and should have taken care of San Diego, but they didn't. And because they didn't, this is the story we get. We get the old man closing out his career with a Super Bowl championship, walking off the field as the starting quarterback of a team that put on one of the best defensive performances we've seen in the title game. It's his Super Bowl, regardless of how well he played and how bad he played. It's still his championship. So instead of walking out getting the backup ring, he walks out being the starting quarterback of yet another championship. And how close was he to not being in that position? I'm telling you, paper thin. It was paper thin. How does Gary Kubiak make the change to Peyton Manning going into the playoffs if Osweiler plays well in Week 17? How does he even conceive of that? People are going to remember this season as one of those sort of roller coaster, wow, I still can't believe it came together like that. You know, it's like Derek Jeter getting the game-winning RBI in his final at-bat at Yankee Stadium. In a way, you're like, wow, somehow he was put in a position to win a baseball game, his final one at the stadium, just so the stars lined up perfectly for Jeter to be in that position to do that. Peyton Manning was in that position to do that for the Denver Broncos. Not much, but boy, was it enough, and it was a great speech. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and YahooSportsRadio.com.
We're going to spend a lot of time talking about Manning and the legacy and all of that because of a huge day. I mean, it's a historic day in sports when a guy who's played 18 years in the NFL and goes down as one of the greatest of all time retires. It's a big deal, but we are going to get to some other things. Nick Schirrer is going to join us, our very own Nick Schirrer from Yahoo Sports Radio. We're going to talk about UFC 196 from over the weekend, and Holly Holm losing and Conor McGregor losing and what this means. Again, that's coming up in 15 minutes, so you don't want to miss that. We'll also get into the Eagles. They are stripping down all of the Chip Kelly mess. I love when teams do this, by the way. They look at, they come in, they get rid of a coach and they go, and by the way, all of you guys that came with him, you're all gone too. Yeah, nothing like taking the big old eraser to the roster of the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll get into that as well. 800-777-2907 if you want to get your thoughts in on Manning, on the speech today, if you had a chance to hear it, and what he's meant to the NFL, college football especially. We're going to, next hour, we're going to dive into his time at Tennessee. All right, here's some cuts from Manning and his press conference today in Denver. And we'll start off when Manning talks about not only Johnny Unitas, but also the significance of the number 18.
I had met him once before, but when the game was over, I had a chance to shake Johnny Unitas' hand. He told me, Peyton, you stay at it. I'm pulling for you. Well, I have stayed at it. I've stayed at it for 18 years, and I hope that old number 19 is up there with his flat top and maybe his black high tops on. And I hope he knows that I have stayed at it, and maybe he's even a little proud of me. There's just something about 18 years. 18 is a good number, and today I retire from pro football.
We asked this question yesterday, you know, whether he would cry, and I hoped he would because I think it means a lot to him, and I was kind of hoping he would show some emotion. He never broke down, but you could hear the quivering in his voice at times. And I will tell you this, I've seen Manning after many post game interviews. I don't know if you noticed this in the speech. He seemed very jumpy. This was an emotional thing. It was very hard to be calm in the normal Manning. You know, you've seen Manning after losses, and he's just sort of like, well, you know, we did. This was, he knew it was going to mean a lot. And talking about Johnny Unitas, boy, he just knows the right things to say. This was really, really well done. He talked about Indiana becoming a football town.
When I was drafted by the Colts, Indianapolis was a basketball and a car racing town. But it didn't take long for the Colts to convert the city and state of Indiana into football evangelists.
Bob Kravitz of the Indy Star wrote a letter to Peyton Manning and kind of a, you know, in a style of a column, he wrote a letter to Manning and he pointed that out. He said, look, it was a basketball state. It was an auto racing state. Manning made it a football town, and there would be no Lucas Oil Stadium. The Colts possibly would have gone to Indianapolis in a couple of years if Manning hadn't been on the team, winning games, getting that team to the playoffs, and getting people really, really interested. Listen, I was young, but I was old enough to kind of remember the Baltimore Colts moving to Indianapolis, and I remember the conversations like in the magazines and what people were like, "What are you going to Indianapolis for? Like, what's in Indianapolis? Why would you put an NFL team in Indianapolis?" Today it seems insane. You could put an NFL team anywhere. You could put it in the middle of North Dakota and it'd be successful. But back then, there really was, what are you going to Indianapolis for? That's insane. Manning comes, you know, obviously decades later, but he helped make that city a viable football town. Glad he took the Denver deal. Here's Peyton Manning.
When I visited Denver 4 years ago, if John Elway had sat me down and said, Peyton, here's what we're going to do. We're going to win over 50 games, win four straight division championships, lose only three division games in 4 years, and none will be on the road. We'll beat the Patriots in two championship games. You're going to win NFL Comeback Player of the Year, another MVP. Your offense will set single-season passing records. You'll break a couple more all-time records, and we'll go to a couple of Super Bowls. I think I would have taken that deal.
How many athletes get a chance to have a second part of their career like what Peyton Manning had? I mean, how many athletes take a year off, have to reset everything, have to go to another team, some more different coaches, some different players, unfamiliar surroundings, new fan base, new expectations, and turned it into all the things he just mentioned? Over 50 games, winning the division, beating the Patriots, going to two Super Bowls. He went to two Super Bowls in 4 years with a brand new team in the latter part of his career. I mean, how many athletes get a chance to have that kind of second act? Very, very few. And yet, he did. He took a year off. He comes. Michael Jordan took a year off. Like, he went to go play baseball and he came back and won three more titles. But he was with the same team, same organization, same coaches, same teammates. Manning had to dump it all. Indianapolis had to dump it all, and had to sort of get rid of the doubters who were wondering, oh man, neck surgery? You're going to play NFL quarterback with four neck surgeries? How's that going to work out? Well, it did work out well. He jokes about his daughter. I loved this part. He joked about his daughter, and you could hear, again, the emotion of this moment.
A week before the Super Bowl, our daughter Mosley asked me, Daddy, is this the last game? Yes, Mosley, it's the last game of the season. I sure do want you to win that trophy. I do too, Mosley. And that's what we're going to try to do. Then she asked, Daddy, is this the last game ever? And that's just when I shook my head in amazement, because I was thinking Morton Adam Schefter had gotten to my 5-year-old daughter to cultivate a new source.
That's good. That's good. That could have got really emotional. And you're talking about your kids. I talk about my kids. I get all teared up when things like that. But to swing it like that, to turn it like that. I said this is a masterful piece of work by Peyton Manning. But I like this next part. I like this next part because, again, I said this earlier. I thought this was a love letter to football. I thought it was a love letter to a career, a love letter to the sport. Because everything in this was about the sport. Everything about it, everything about him retirement was the sport. Here's Peyton Manning on what he'll miss.
On Fridays, I'll miss picking out the game balls with my equipment guys. And talking football with the broadcast crews before the game. And afterwards, I'll miss recapping the game with my dad. And checking to see if the Giants won. And calling Eli as we're both on our team buses. I miss that handshake with Tom Brady, and I miss the plane rides after a big win with 53 teammates standing in the aisles, laughing and celebrating during the whole flight. I miss playing in front of so many great fans, both at home and on the road, and I'll even miss the Patriot fans in Foxborough, and they should miss me because they sure did get a lot of wins off of me.
I loved it. I loved this. I said this at the start. There's always these people that want to attack football. And there's all these people who accuse certain guys of putting a war on football. This was just a one man's love letter to the sport. This is what this meant to me. I'm not leaving because it injured me, because it took away some things. I'm going to miss it all. This was a well done and perfectly executed retirement speech. But then again, with Peyton Manning, would you expect anything else? All right, we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk UFC 196 over the weekend. Our very own Nick Schrar from Yahoo Sports Radio is going to join us. I'll break down what we saw Saturday, what it means for the sport and the fighters involved. That's coming up next. It's Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, again, it's going to be Peyton Manning a little bit more centric tonight because of the press conference and the legacy, and we're going to get into all that. But there are other things that I want to get to as well. We'll get to UFC 196, Nick Sherrara. When I first joined this network, 4 years ago, Nick was my Sunday producer. I started on Sunday nights, and Nick was my producer. It was great because he was so into UFC and MMA, and he knew all this stuff. And I would get interviews, and I would always rely on Nick to help me out with a lot of the stuff. And Nick was really, really knowledgeable about this. So as I've gotten more and more into it, I look at what happened over the weekend, and I kind of want to put this in some sort of context in terms of, all right, Conor McGregor was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He's obviously a larger than life personality. He is, you know, becoming one of those figures that people on the periphery of the sport, not necessarily the diehards, they've already kind of known, but the people on the periphery look and say, oh, look at this character, look at this personality. I want to kind of learn more about him. He's on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and then he loses. All right, so what does that mean? Nick Sherrara joins us from Yahoo Sports Radio. How are you, my friend?
Doing awesome, man. How you doing, Tony?
Good, man. I was telling people that you and I started together, or at least I started with you on Yahoo Sports Radio when I first joined the network, and you used to help me all the time with this sport. So when I was thinking about the right person to get to sort of process UFC 196, I thought Nick Sherrara is the man I need to go to. So thank you for your time on this.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, so as I said earlier, Conor McGregor, he's a larger-than-life personality. Again, he's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He's drawing in people. He's got that brash personality that people like that are sort of attracted to sort of see where he's going to go. He loses to Nate Diaz, but he has to move up in a couple of weight classes. Was that the preliminary factor in why he lost on Saturday?
Yeah, I think it's probably one of several factors because it could be the preliminary factor because bigger fighters deal with striking a little bit better when they're fighting smaller fighters, and I think that was the case. Not to mention, Nate Diaz is a guy that he trains with boxers all the time for training camps, for MMA training camps. This is a guy that trains with championship level boxers all the time. So it could be. I wouldn't necessarily say the only, but yeah, it's safe to say it's a preliminary factor. You couple that with the fact that he was really successful with that left hand for almost his entire UFC career. And he had some success with it against Nate Diaz, but when he realized that he wasn't going to knock him out, just like he admitted, I think he kind of panicked.
As far as the way Diaz fights, was this an overall dominating fight over Conor McGregor, or was it, I got a few punches in and then I was able to do what I wanted to do, but other than that, it was kind of a draw in the beginning. How did this fight play out?
I think it played just into the way Nate Diaz fights. Nate Diaz is not really a guy that goes out and just dominates you. He picks you apart. He picks his shots. He tries not to get hit. He uses his jiu-jitsu. He pushes you up against the fence. He makes this a grind, and that's just the way he fights. He's always been like that. And I think both main events on this card, what it's shown is that A, anything can happen in the sport of MMA. B, that some fighters are actually more dangerous when the fight goes longer. And then really probably the most important takeaway is octagon experience. I know it's crazy. Conor has had 8 fights in the UFC, but only half of them have really been outside the first round. He's always finished his opponent in the first round. Nate Diaz has had over 20 fights in the UFC, and many of those have gone to decision, to the full 3 or 5 round fights, depending on what type of fight it was. And that type of experience cannot be replaced. You just cannot replace octagon experience, not MMA experience, but octagon experience. And I think you can make the same argument for the Holly Holm fight. Misha Tate had about 7 or 8 fights under her belt in the UFC. I think Holly Holm only had 3 or 4. That makes a difference. And I think the fact that she fought a fighter that can go outside the striking realm, I think that makes a difference. So I think the octagon experience was huge for Nate Diaz in this fight.
In terms of both fights, in terms of the upset nature of both fights, What are we talking about here, Nick? Are we talking Buster Douglas over Mike Tyson here? Or was this stuff that guys like you who know this sport could have figured out based on some factors?
Yeah, I think people within the sport or not who cover the sport thought that Nate Diaz could lose, like myself. It was kind of an emotional pick for me. I just followed Nate Diaz his whole career. But I wouldn't have been surprised if Connor got won, and I certainly wouldn't have been surprised if Nate won. That's just the nature of Nate, the Diaz brothers. They fight, they grind it out, and the second you think it's over, it's not. They're the kings of coming from behind and winning fights. So I think a lot of people were really concerned for Conor McGregor. When he lost that fight against Rafael Dos Anjos to a broken foot, I think some of them were concerned, and some of them were like, you know what, he still has a chance. He's done it before. Everything he says, he actually does inside the octagon. So some people were like, yeah, Conor could win, but I think many people within the sport kind of knew that Nate Diaz had a chance.
Where does Conor McGregor go from here? Does he try to stay at that current weight and fight there? Does he go back? Where do you see Conor going from right now?
I think that it seems like he's almost forced to go back to 145 and defend that belt. It looks like Jose Aldo is the front runner. I think Frankie Edgar has a legitimate case for a title shot. But considering how long Jose Aldo defended that title before losing to Conor McGregor, I expect Jose Aldo to be the next fight. Now, everybody's talking UFC 200. That's kind of a quick turnaround, especially considering Conor McGregor losing the way he did. Yeah, he lost a submission, but that submission came from strikes and from the punches that Nate Diaz gave him. So it's going to be interesting to see how he recovers. If he could make the UFC 200 fight at July, that would be huge. I would imagine he would be the main event anyway, despite the loss. I expect, if I have to choose right now, I expect a title defense at 145 against Jose Aldo. Maybe not necessarily at UFC 200, but at some point in 2016.
All right, on the women's side, Ronda Rousey. Now, does she go up against Tate to try to get the title? Because I really would like to have seen her go up against Holly Holm again.
Yeah, I would have loved to see that too. It was kind of vague what Dana White, UFC President Dana White, said in his text exchange with Ronda Rousey, and she simply said I got to go back to work, and he wasn't sure if that was movies or getting back into the ring with Holly. So I thought that was kind of weird, but he's already said she's set to face Holly Holm. She's set to face Misha Tate, I believe. But I will say this. I think Holly Holm will eventually be the champion again. I don't think anything that Ronda Rousey has shown after her loss has shown that she's really ready to face the media like she really has. She's made these big appearances, but I just think that came with the popularity that she already had. You know, being on the cover of Sports Illustrated, making the Saturday Night Live appearance, doing that interview with Ellen. I think that just came because she was already a popular person. But It just seems scary the way she's reacted to the loss to Holly Holm. I expect Holly Holm to get the belt, whether from Misha Tate or from Ronda.
All right, I got 60 seconds. So overall, the two upsets that went down Saturday night, UFC 196, good for the sport, or does it set the sport back a bit?
I don't think it set it back or made it move forward, because it used to be necessary for them to have star power and big pay-per-view buys only through fighters who have long winning streaks, but they've experienced titles changing hands quite a bit lately. So they're used to titles and upsets. They're used to that more now than ever before. So I don't think it moves it back. I think it only keeps it where it's at right now, and Conor McGregor will still be the draw that he's always been.
Yeah, I think a Sports Illustrated cover is always good for business. Hey, Nate, Nick, I appreciate your time as always, my friend. You know this sport inside and out, and it's good to reconnect with you, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me, man.
You got it. Nick Schirra, Yahoo Sports Radio on UFC 196. I think it's, I don't think it's got the big push forward, but I kind of agree with him. I don't think this was a step back for the sport. I think these kind of things are good for a sport. I think every now and then you need this kind of conversation. Yeah, Conor McGregor is a draw, and Holly Holm making the kind of splash she did when she beat Ronda Rousey drew more eyeballs to what she was doing. And that's what you want to do in a sport. Continue to grow. play to your diehards. They're the ones, but drag in more people. I think this helped a lot. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Hey, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue through the night tonight. Again, our telephone number if you want to join us, 800-777-2907. Also, Twitter, at Tony D Radio. Facebook, Tony D Radio Show. Multiple ways to get a hold of us. All right, the Philadelphia Eagles are stripping everything down. Word out, this was one of those moments where people talk about how new media is taking over, right? Oh, we don't need this anymore. We don't need that anymore, man. Everyone's getting their news on their phones. Everybody's getting, you can get text messages from your favorite teams, man. You don't need radio anymore. This was a piece of news today I got right from the radio as I was driving my daughter home from soccer practice. This was another example of me driving down the road, listening to the radio, hearing the news and going, oh my gosh. And that the Tennessee Titans are orchestrating a trade with draft picks for the Philadelphia Eagles for DeMarco Murray. Now, Murray did not have a good year with the Eagles, but a lot of that was Chip Kelly's offense, and he didn't feel like there was a place for him. He had 1,800 yards running against that offensive line with the Dallas Cowboys, and he had 700 yards with Chip Kelly's offense with the Eagles. What's he going to do in the Tennessee Titans? Hopefully he'll be a more effective back if they get Laramie Tunsil and that offensive line gets a little better. But if that offensive line doesn't get a little better, he's going to have the same problems at Tennessee that he had in Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, he couldn't fit into the system. In Tennessee, if they don't fix that offensive line, he will be in a system that will render him ineffective. But it's a bold move for the Titans, because who else was out there that's going to run the ball well for the Titans? Bishop Sankey, who had about 500 yards running the ball. So this is a good move for the Titans. Give DeMarco Murray a new piece of scenery to see if he can be effective. Great. And if they get Laramie Tunsil, the offensive line will be better. If Taylor Lewan plays better, and they also shore up the other side of the line, it could pay off dividends. But this is more about the Eagles than it is about the Titans. This is about the eraser that is going down with the Philadelphia Eagles. Byron Maxwell and Kiko Alonso have been traded to the Miami Dolphins. Again, this is trying to erase some of Chip Kelly's history. And this is, I see this every now and then with teams. They get a coach. The coach has free reign. The coach builds up the team, puts people in place, renders the GM ineffective. The GM comes back, Howie Roseman takes back over the team and says, hey, these are the guys we're going to jettison. Now, my only question, and maybe Adam, you can help me answer this. My only question is, if this is a strip down of some players that, all right, didn't quite work out under Chip Kelly. Maxwell was not obviously Legion of Doom material, but he was getting a little bit better. If they're so all in of stripping that down, why did they overpay for Sam Bradford?
That's it's a very weird thing going on right now with the Eagles. I mean, they could have just they could have let his market play out. I feel like they could have done that anyways. But
ship him out and then say, go find your deal and see what happens.
Go see what you got. Come back to us and give us a chance. Yeah. That's all we ask.
That's a pretty...
And if he goes out and gets, what did he get? 2 years, like $18 million per
exactly.
year?
Yeah.
Oof. I mean, dang. I still don't like the deal, but I guess I don't know. The Eagles are still confusing without Chip Kelly. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, this is crazy. I mean, Chip Kelly and this team... Right. I mean, this is not just a divorce. This is Kramer versus Kramer stuff. I mean, this is everything goes. Like, this is the nastiest. Get out and take all these guys with you. Remember how everyone was so excited in Philadelphia when they got DeMarco Murray? And then, Chip Kelly botched that up. Kiko Alonso, I thought was a good pickup when that first went down. I thought that was a good pickup.
And it's hard to judge these trades because we don't know what's going the other way yet. We don't know the draft pick compensation. I mean, if the Dolphins gave up 3 first-round picks, it's a great deal.
That's a great deal.
If they gave up 3 fifth-round picks, it's not a good deal. So yeah. We still are waiting to see, but it's just weird that, I mean, Kiko Alonso's still a young, good player.
Still a young, good player, yeah. And Maxwell might just need a change of scenery.
Yeah, and Maxwell definitely helps what the Dolphins are looking for because they need secondary help badly.
Yeah, that was a problem for Miami. So this is a pretty good deal for the Dolphins. But you're right, when the deal becomes finalized, what did they get? I mean, I don't know what the Titans are giving up for DeMarco Murray. So, you know, it could be a nice little treasure trove of picks that really mattered to the Eagles. But again, this has got that same kind of feel of the best way it was put when I was reading up on this was a big eraser to the Chip Kelly era.
Yeah.
Just taking that big eraser. And
which
just
he took a huge eraser to the era before him.
Exactly.
McCoy and Macklin and DeSean Jackson, all those guys are gone.
But you know what? This reminds me of, you know, look, people can say all they want about buyer's remorse and whatever. But look, Chip Kelly just didn't work out in Philadelphia because as he got more power, he got a little bit more crazy. And then as he got a little bit more crazy, he alienated a lot of people on the team and created sort of a toxic culture. But like I said, I've said this about Chip Kelly. You can't take away the fact that when he got there, he got them a 10-6 record and in the postseason. And then he got another 10-6 record and couldn't get him into the postseason. But nevertheless, it was still a 10-6 record. And then last year was a bust. He was not let go because they didn't make the playoffs for a second year in a row. He got let go because the toxic atmosphere around that complex was too much for the owner. When you give a guy that much power over what you own, they have to take care of it. And Chip Kelly didn't take care of it. It wasn't just winning and losing. You know, if he had gone 14-2, you might be able to put up with the toxic culture. But if you get a toxic culture where players are openly complaining about playing for a guy, and then all of a sudden you're not winning, you've got to let him go to take care of what you own. Yahoo Sports Radio.